I'm amazed. I'm still amazed that these assets have appreciated the way they have without making money. I mean, I'm old enough that when I went to school, I learned that the value of an asset was the discounted value of its future cash flow. But that doesn't seem to apply to sports. It did for a while. I mean, when I first got in, teams were selling based upon multiples of cash flow. And then they started selling based upon multiples of gross income. And now they sell based upon how much somebody's willing to pay without any rational basis. And it's really only over the last 5 to 10 years that this irrationality has crept in.
The chairman, Jerry Reinsdorf, discussing the valuation of sports franchises at the Milken Institute Global Conference panel this past week. I'm Jeff Meller, along with Brian Hanley. We've been dissecting some of these comments. Now, compare and contrast what Reinsdorf said there to brand new Phoenix Suns and Phoenix Mercury owner Matt Ishbia, who recently purchased the two Phoenix franchises for a total of $4 billion. He was on Bill Simmons's podcast, and he talked about his approach to owning sports franchises.
I think of things like, how do we make the NBA fan experience phenomenal? How do we dominate that? How do we change the game and get maybe more global? How do we do things different? Like I'm not as focused on valuations. Like, money always follows success. And that's how I built my mortgage business and built my life. And so we're going to focus on the fans. We're going to focus on taking care of the players. Like, what do I got to do to make the players even better, healthier? All these like technology, science, like, and do things at the new level, not thinking like, well, if I do this, we'll make this. Like, that will follow. I don't even pay attention to it. I'm not selling the team ever. So I don't care if the value is $4 billion forever or $400 billion. It's not going anywhere. And so my focus is on the players, the fans, the experience. And quite honestly, like, I make a good amount of money in my mortgage business. I just want to have fun. This is fun. Like, I want to win. Like, we're going to compete at the Phoenix Suns and the Mercury. There's a lot of progress we can make in the women's sports. I'm very excited about that opportunity, the WNBA. So I look at it maybe differently. I don't have a silver bullet to like solve these things, but I'm going to make the game better and help in any way I can with the players, the fans, and that experience. And I think, you know, the valuations, that stuff will follow.
Kind of interesting to hear them back to back, right, Bri? One man's approach to how he views pouring money into his, you know, we can call it a vanity project, but that almost sounds, you know, dismissive of what Matt Ishbia is trying to do. Because when you look at sports, they're for the cities, you know, kind of like a public trust. Like, the city will love and adore you if you can bring a consistent winning franchise to them, and they will reward you handsomely. And I think it's interesting to hear Ishbia, the Phoenix Suns new owner, talk about how he's going to approach this. He's not worried about the valuation, whether you deem it realistic or, you know, not. He doesn't give a damn. He's just going to pump money into this, and he'll be, because he doesn't intend on selling.
No, I mean, and look, Jerry got into baseball with Eddie Einhorn. Jerry grew up a Yankees fan. He was passionate about the sport, and said the World Series, winning a World Series, meant more to him than winning multiple championships in the NBA. That's how much he loves the game of baseball. I'm not dismissing that. But that said, you hear the new owner of the Phoenix Suns talking about, I'm never selling. I don't care how much money I make. I want to maximize the experience. The money will follow success. Who cares what it's worth, what I paid for it, and $400 billion, I don't care because I'm not selling it. You'd never hear that from Jerry. And they do care how much they spend. And again, the food is terrific. They've renovated the stadium. Actually, the state has done that. Again, the state does everything that to make it comfortable because that's part of the lease.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just two ways of approaching it. And I'm not saying throw stupid money at stupid deals, but you look at the attendance in the league, the Dodgers sitting there at 47,000, 48,000. St. Louis, even 10 games out, again, their season ticket base is probably most of this, but almost 40,000 on average, even though they're in the basement. The Yankees, the Phillies, who are in the World Series. How many years ago the Phillies couldn't fill up the ballpark? This money follows success. Up and down. San Diego, which has never seen a mega deal that didn't want to make or a mega contract it didn't want to sign. Mm-hmm. They're averaging 38,000 in a small market.
Yeah.
Houston, you end up in the postseason, the fans show up. And the White Sox, again, sit there at 18,000 announced, and on some beautiful Thursday afternoons, 10,000 announced, and there might have been half that actually in the stand. So it's, and the experience of the rate is as good as you're going to find in most ballparks, right? So
yeah,
it's not that. It's just about how much money do you want to put to solving the problem, and you come off a subpar year and say things are going to be different, and you actually reduce the payroll, and you really made no significant, you know, God bless Andrew Benintendi, you didn't make any mega moves in the offseason to change. It was just the manager and accountability and health was going to be the answer to everything this year.
Like, it's not a, I would say, when you look at, okay, how do we figure this out? It's not really difficult. The truth is that all that matters for fans is putting a winning baseball team out there, right?
Yep.
And however you, if you can figure out how to do that consistently, guess what? They will show up. Back in 2005, the White Sox drew 2.3 million people. The following year, after they had won the World Series, that's when they had the highest attendance ever, 2.9 million. They just missed drawing 3 million people to guaranteed rate back in 2006 on the heels of winning a World Series championship, because they started that season out well. They ended up winning 90 games that year.
Yep.
They didn't make the playoffs, but people were excited because the White Sox won the World Series the year before. It's not really that difficult, right, Bri? It's a pretty easy straight line to draw. You win, and people will show up and support your team. That's the truth of it. And however you figure out how to do it, guess what? They will be there to take my money, right? Like, just take it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, have it. Futurama. Just take it. That's, we will gladly give you our money if you put a winning ball club out there. Now, it's not quite the same because they're in a definitely a different market, but the Tampa Bay Rays, as we talked about a lot last weekend because they were here, they found a way to win. Now, Tampa, that's a whole different market. In Chicago, if the White Sox could figure out how to do what the Rays are doing, no one would give a damn how much money the White Sox spend.
No.
Just
you,
bring
you
a winner.
You wouldn't be able to buy a ticket if you had the start the Tampa had, but they're God bless, baseball's a rumor in Tampa, and that was supposedly where the White Sox were going. And they're drawing 17,000 this year with the historic start they've had. You know, you go back to the White Sox World Series team. You had Ozzy holding court before games in the dugout. I always said he could charge, you know, should have charged a 2-drink minimum because he was so entertaining, and just he'd be for a half hour talking not only baseball, whatever. Got himself in trouble a few times, but still doing it on the pre and post game at a high level because that's who Ozzy is. You had personalities from the manager. Don Cooper is a irascible red rear end guy, but he was a personality. The players, certainly there were personalities on that team. I bring this up because Brian McCray told Paul Sullivan, the Tribune, Brian McCray was on the Cubs team in 1997 that went 0-14 to start the season. And they were only interesting until they won the first game because they were going nowhere after that. Right.
Yep.
It was just like, how many can you possibly lose to start a season and bury yourself? And he talked about, similar to the Sox, you know, playing tough teams at the start of the season. The schedule is no friend to them. But he said, you know, we never recovered. We almost got back to 500, maybe six games within 500. But we spent so much energy just trying to get back to 500, make it somewhat respectable that they used all their energy to do that. But he said he's been watching the White Sox. And he said the difference between the Cubs team and this Sox team is, the talent is there on the White Sox. And he said, they have talent, but they just don't look like they care, which, you know, if the bats aren't going, a lot of times that it looks like you don't care.
Mm-hmm.
He said, something's going on there that's festered. It looks like they don't even like being around each other. How much is a likable team? And, you know, winning is fun. Ozzy said, fun is winning. Winning is fun. I get that. But I've asked people around the team, Tim Anderson doesn't seem like, you know, your idea of a lot of laughs, and that's just who he is. I mean, he cares about being the best player he can. People say he's not very likable. I've never met him. I don't know that. But how much does that come into play? You have to care about the players you're rooting for. And if they're this bad, even personalities that we talked about, Liam, what a great story that is. God bless. You know, how could you not root for someone to beat cancer? But Brian McRae saying they don't look like they even want to be around each other. And that started to come out at the end of last season from the players and people in the clubhouse saying there were cliques and everyone wasn't together. And now they come, you know, start the season the way they start this year. And it's just not, I mean, it's, for me, and not being a diehard Sox fan by any stretch, even watching it, it's just not enjoyable to watch. And I don't know that there are a lot of guys on that team that I necessarily believe I could root for or want to sit down and have a beer with. Maybe that's stupid way of looking at things, but I think that goes hand in hand with being a fan. You want to like the guys you're rooting for, right? You don't want them to be guys who appear not to care or just happy the direct deposit works every week.
I would agree with that in a sense, but I do think more than anything else, like, fans just want to go out and, like, it's, we just want to support a winner. And, you know, if, see, I don't know. I disagree a little bit because I think likability comes from when guys are winning and guys you're rooting for are performing on the field. I think when guys aren't performing at a level where they're helping to provide winning baseball or winning basketball or winning football, it's very easy for people to turn on them, and whether they like them or not. Like, and so that's, and not every person's like that. You know, that we all have our own opinions on how we approach this thing.
Sure.
You know, so everything's a little bit different, but I think if you just win somehow, some way, we're pretty callous when it comes to that. There's a lot to talk about. We got a lot of people on the line who want to talk about this. 312-332-3776. Al, Dan, you, everybody else, hang tight. We'll get to you in a moment here on ESPN 1000.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Miller and Hanley hanging out with you on ESPN 1000 until 11 o'clock today. White Sox baseball, 2:30 pregame as the Sox finish up their series with the Cincinnati Reds today in Cincinnati. Cubs get going at 1:20. They will take on the defending Cy Young Award winner, Sandy Alcantara, who has not pitched like a Cy Young Award winner this season at all, Bri. He has struggled mightily. He pitched very well in his first start of the season, and then since then, he's been an absolute disaster. He brings in an ERA over 5 today. So we'll see what the Cubs bats do against the defending National League Cy Young Award winner today.
Yeah, here's hoping they can take advantage of continuing struggles and he doesn't revert back to being Cy Young guy.
So. And we'll see if Miguel Amaya gets to sing again today.
Go Cubs, go! Go Cubs, go!
Meller and Hanley here on ESPN 1000. Let's try Al, who's in Portage Park. Hey, Al, what's going on, man?
Hey, good morning, fellas.
What's
Thanks
up?
For taking my call.
Our pleasure.
So I wanted to chime in on Jerry Reinsdorf's comments recently. And since it's Derby weekend, I want to tie it into horse racing for a second. So, you know the famous saying, when someone shows you who they are, believe them?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Certainly.
I think Jerry Reinsdorf has done that for decades with both franchises, you know, here in Chicago. He's shown us who he is and how the teams are managed. And then his comments this past week that you guys have been playing, he tells you who he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, so Jerry really let the cat out of the bag. He tells you who he is. So as a fan, I think you just have to take the information for what it is and then decide, you know, what you want to do with that or how you want to go about it as being a fan. And my tie into horse racing was this. So what Jerry did this week reminds me of Dwayne Lucas. I was watching an interview with him a few years back, and Lucas is getting up there in age, and they asked him, how did he pick horses and whatnot? And Lucas said, hell, I'm up there in age. I'm just going to tell you some things. And he said, you know, some of the things that he would look at during these auctions, which were really top secret for him, you know, but he's up there in age and, I don't know, had a senior honest moment and start spilling the beans. And I feel like Reinsdorf, you know, did the same thing this week.
Interesting takeaway there, Al. And I guess, Bri, the thing we haven't hit on just yet, he's not always showing us, though, because we're learning about secret extensions that he's giving to his executives. That seems to be, I don't know when it officially became the MO of the White Sox and Bulls, but they don't like telling you anymore when they are signing their current leaders to contract extensions and brand new contracts, because it sounds like Artturis Karnišovas received one courtesy of The Athletic's Darnell Mayberry's reporting. He mentioned that earlier this week in one of his pieces, that it sounds like AK has received a contract extension, and I know a lot of Bulls fans were not happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense. If you're going to extend the coach, then the guy who's his boss should be able to, if he has that authority, should be sticking around too, even though the honeymoon period is long over. And I guess we're now just all pegging the Bulls' immediate future either on defying a 1.8% chance to be the top pick in the draft, or Patrick Williams being the exact player that AK believes him to be, even though he's been around for 3 years. Either one, I don't know that I'd want to hang my hat on either one of those. I mean, I don't get, you know, I get sometimes it's stay out of Sox business, or, you know, Rocky Wirtz telling people, you know, if you were in the company, I'd tell you, but you're not, so don't ask questions. It goes back to, again, to what's the end game for the Bulls? They have now tripled down on continuity, and you know, apparently Vooch is coming back because you didn't trade him. If it's up to him, he's a free agent, so he has to, one, like the money, mm-hmm. Two, like the money, and three, maybe like the plan. But he likes the money; he'll probably stick around. And are you going to go get Michael Conley? Who's going to be the guy you get to hold down the fort until Lonzo comes back, if he ever comes back? And yet everyone's getting new paper. Has Billy Donovan developed anybody on this roster that I'm unaware of?
Not that I can pinpoint.
I mean, look, compared to Jim Boylan, of course you're going to want Billy Donovan sticking around. But you're a sub 500 team this year. For a half a season, you were everyone's beloved Bulls last year until Lonzo got hurt. And again, the thing jumped the tracks in short order, and mm-hmm. you stumbled into the playoffs and a quick exit. And now you're waiting for Lonzo yet again, maybe another season, maybe never. And yet everyone gets new paper.
Lock them up. Long-term extensions for everybody. Let's try Daniel, who's in Highland Park. Daniel, you're on with Miller and Hanley. What's up?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I think the Sox, going back to them, it's two things that have a percentage. I'm not saying it's everything, but two things that keep weighing on my mind. One is the health issue. I think we can't sweep under the table entirely. It has to be part of it, because here and there we're always losing a part. That's usually essential. But the second thing, I think we're still under the Reinsdorf effect. He was a cooler. If you ever saw the movie The Cooler with William Marcy, that
sure.
he cooled
William
off.
H. Macy, yep.
Macy, right, exactly. And he was a cooler in Las Vegas to someone who's doing well. That's what Reinsdorf did to that dugout when he came in. Before that,
Daniel, you mean La Russa, right? You mean when Reinsdorf hired La Russa?
Well, exactly it. And it's the same thing to me, Reinsdorf and La Russa, because it just cooled off the dugout. And they were doing so well before that. They were a team. But then again, as you say, sometimes the health would go away, and then what? You don't have one of the sparks.
Mm. It's an interesting point. Like, it does. I think the problem with the Tony La Russa hiring, and back to another Reinsdorf comment from this past week, something we didn't play yet, but Reinsdorf talked about, you can't become a fan if you're the owner and start meddling. You have to let your general manager and your coaches do the decision making. And of course, that omits the fact that clearly Jerry Reinsdorf was the one who hired Tony La Russa, his old friend, probably despite Rick Hahn's best efforts, right? Like, we all know that Rick Hahn, and he showed us in the introductory press conference when he talked about how this is the decision the organization is making. The organization believes Tony La Russa is the best man for the job. He never really said, believe.
He said it has been determined,
yes.
or something, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, this is my guy and I can't wait to get to work with him. But Tony did it. The concern going in was Tony was going to be so out of touch with young players.
Yes.
And you know, we can question his managerial in-game strategies. But he bent over backwards.
Absolutely.
To run interference for players. He told Luis Robert and guys not to bust the rear end to get to first. because you could hurt yourself if it looks like a routine out. He defended. He got anytime there was a question of any kind of negative connotation to it in the post game, he went off. I mean, he was not hearing any of it. He was there for every single player to a fault to make sure that no one questioned want to, effort, talent, whatever it was, and yet it never translated to a successful month or two, let alone a season.
Yeah, I maintain. Look, I don't think Tony La Russa, the first year he was here, they were in the playoffs and they ran into a buzzsaw that was the Houston Astros. That was a better team, right? Like, I think the problem is that when you hired Tony La Russa, you thought you had a team that was, quote, ready to win, right? But the reality was they were still a few pieces shy of being truly competitive with the elites in baseball, at least in my opinion. And I think that showed itself in the playoffs. And then when you have the opportunity to maybe try and add some reinforcements to the roster, you choose to decline, you know, offering Carlos Rodon, you know, a qualifying offer, you know, which whether or not you think maybe you were up in the air about it, but the truth was he was coming off a ridiculous season where I thought offering him $17.1 million was probably the prudent move, because if another team wanted to come in and sign him, you would have been given a compensatory draft pick. And worst case scenario, you've got Carlos Rodon, who just had an awesome season, back on your roster for $17 million, and he has to go prove yet again that he should be worth the free agent, the big money deal that he eventually did land from the Yankees this past offseason. Like, you know, that's when we get back to spending money and, you know, truly being all in on winning, right? And back to the comments about, you know, second, third place can be a successful season. That's where you start to get disenchanted, disillusioned with sometimes the White Sox as a team if you're a fan of them.
Yeah, and look, they didn't overwhelm Manny Machado with an offer, right?
Yeah.
And you needed to overwhelm Manny Machado with an offer because that's where you're kind of where you were in the scheme of the baseball landscape, right?
Yep.
And he chose it wasn't good enough. And so if you
can't... They were in the same thing. They were in on Bryce Harper that same offseason.
And
you know?
Bring up Bryce Harper, the caller says it's about health. And you have to, okay, we all understand the numerous injuries and length of injuries and myriad of injuries last year. I kept saying last year, I don't see Bryce Harper on the injury list. You didn't have, I mean, God bless you, don't want to miss Aloy or Luis Robert or up and down. But you didn't have an MVP guy sitting out on the sidelines, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't.
Injuries are part of professional sports.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to Lonzo Ball with the Bulls. He's important to this team, but as a NBA executive said to me, I get that he's important to the Bulls. That important?
Yeah.
I mean, how does that even work?
And it
shouldn't be. It shouldn't be so dependent on that. And again, their health issues were not. You weren't missing a Cy Young candidate for 2 months, and you couldn't wait
yes.
till he got back.
It's the length of time too, right? Like you're again, professional sports. You're going to have to account for. There's going to be times when you're going to be playing without some of your better players for, you know, a couple of weeks here and there. You need to have a team that has enough depth that it can withstand that. And if you don't, it's going to be made very apparent very quickly. But that's the nature of professional sports. I'll grant you, it's different when you lose a key player, an MVP candidate for a full season, or as you mentioned, one of your top starting pitchers, when you use for multiple months. That is sometimes an injury that can't be overcome. But a couple weeks here and there, you have to be able to have alternative plans. Otherwise, you're just not going to be successful in sports. Let's try Tim, who's on I-65. Tim, you're on with Mellor and Hanley. What's going on?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I was in Cincinnati last night for that game. I was in southern Indiana visiting family, and mm-hmm. We went over and saw a game. Quite a few Sox fans there. It was nice to see Sox fans. But a couple things you guys touched on. I'm a season ticket holder. You talk about the fan experience there. I don't care. I really don't. Sell me hot dogs, beer, peanuts, pop. That's good enough. I just want to see a product that hustles, mm-hmm. plays the game smart, and is competitive. And I don't get any of that. I don't care about, you know, being able to get a sushi burger or any of that stuff. Show me a team that hustles and plays hard, and you got my money. I'm there. I don't care about all that other stuff. No fans do. We want to see the product on the field perform at a high level and play smart. The other thing is, you talk about the chemistry in the clubhouse. Something that kind of happened in the offseason, nobody really paid attention. A.J. Pollock had a miserable year last year. but he had an $8 million player option.
Yeah.
If he wanted to play for the Sox, he takes $8 million and they got to pay him. He declined that option, hardly shopped around, and immediately signed for $7 million with Seattle. He was willing to take a $1 million pay cut to get away from that locker room. And that says a lot about what's going on with that team. So, you guys have a great day. Thanks for your time.
Thanks. Great call, Tim.
It's great. No, it's a great point. I think Tim's one of the passionate people out there, you know, to his point where he'll be in the ballpark most, you know, a couple times a year, no matter what. He's a season ticket holder. But, like, if you love baseball and you love your team, you're willing to go to plenty of games out there. Just make it so I don't regret being there, right? Like, that's to your point, Bri. Sometimes likability from your players and playing hard is enough for some people out there.
Yeah, in this city, effort is everything. We all want to win championships, but Chicago being Chicago, those championships were hard to come by, name the sport, for all these decades, and having been born and raised here. I mean, I had Cubs season tickets before I got out of college and became a sports writer. And on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, summer, 75 degrees, sunny, when they're drawing like 20,000 people, I couldn't give those tickets away. Literally, you know, people want to go cut their lawn. They certainly rather go play golf or do whatever, but rather do yard work than sit 10 rows back of the Cubs batting circle, right? I mean, that tells you. But if you get whether it was the Try Hard Bulls, some Bears teams that had good, you know, earnest professional players that just weren't good enough because they didn't have a quarterback. Certainly, you saw it with Kane and Taves became Kane and Taves. You saw that kind of organically grow with the Blackhawks. People want to see an effort. They want to see They want to see talent. But to our caller's point, the game experience does matter. If you're going to the old Wrigley before renovations and concrete was dropping on your head, you probably had a little bit of issue. And, you know, the Steam Dogs have been sitting there since the beginning of the homestand.
Yeah.
You know, that is part and parcel, especially with the prices you're paying these days. But no one's ever questioned the fan experience around the Sox game and the food and drink and all that. But to our caller's point, if you don't have a team that looks like they're going to give you enough effort to get to the last month of the season and be contending and in it, to Jerry's point, then everyone's happy. That's huge. That's a huge void. This town appreciates effort and demands it. If they think people are going through the motions, they got no time for you.
Bears had a chance to get their rookies into the building this weekend. Bears' first rookie minicamp went off. We'll share with you what Luke Getsy had to say about why the Bears chose to stick with Justin Fields and not entertain some of the quarterback prospects in this draft. I'll let you hear from Luke Getsy next.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Jim Lexa points out, Bri, that Tony La Russa defended everybody but your mean Mercedes, whom he hung out to dry. Always appreciate Jim listening. He's a longtime loyal listener, and he is right. That's the one person who La Russa would not defend.
Yeah.
One player.
The young, hot player went against the old unwritten rules of showboating or trying to hit home runs when the game was already in hand. Remember, he undressed the kid.
Oh, yeah. Yes, who could forget in Minnesota? That was the one down moment of that season that was, for the most part, a very fun season. 312-332-3776. I'm Jeff Meller along with Brian Hanley. The Bears had their first rookie minicamp of the 2023 season. Luke Getsy met the media yesterday, and I'm sure plenty of people will recall that Ryan Poles talked about when the Bears initially found out that they had the number one overall pick, that they would have to be, quote, blown away by the quarterback prospects in the draft if they were going to go ahead and draft one and move away from Justin Fields. But he left the door open, right? So Luke Getsy was asked about this yesterday. So what happened in the evaluation process when you were looking at this year's quarterbacks in the draft? You know, your Bryce Young, your C.J. Stroud, your Anthony Richardson, even your Will Levis. What happened when you compared them to Justin Fields? This was Luke Getsy's response yesterday.
I don't really think it's apples to apples in that sense. I really don't think you say, okay, hey, here's what we have with Justin and where he can go, or here's what these guys can go. I think it's just you're doing your due diligence with the draft as we do with every single position. But I think it's you know, as we evaluated Justin from last year, I think the growth from where, you know, everybody, in including yourselves, like how the way you viewed the guy and the way the team viewed the guy to where he was at this time last year to where he is now, I think it just is light years ahead of where it was. And we feel like he has a ton more to grow going forward. So we're excited to try to get that the best out of him moving forward and keep working to where we think he can go.
So very honest assessment from Luke Getsy, talking about him believing that Justin Fields is light years ahead of where he was previously. Now, the caveat, of course, is that despite the successful season Justin Fields had running the football, where he had 1,143 rushing yards, the second most in NFL history for a quarterback, he still only had 2,242 yards passing. And so Luke Getsy was asked, all right, well, Justin was amongst the least productive passers last year, so are you confident that he can improve? This was Luke Getsy's response.
The yards that he ran for, a third of those came off of pass plays that were scrambles that he decided to run, which is an element that, you know, we're fortunate to have with him in that position. So, and then it goes to everything, right? Getting the team around him better, and us all being together for another year, and the continuity that we have and the communication that he and I have, you know, where we were to kind of at the beginning of the season to the end of the season, I think is a lot better. And so we're hoping to build off of all that stuff. I think anytime you can be together with somebody and keep that consistency, there's going to be growth, and he has a lot more growth ahead of him. And we're excited to tap into that.
Consistency, almost a synonym for continuity, Bri.
Yeah, and look, whether those runs were broken down pass plays, and that's a talent that we all know Justin has, that's wonderful. But he was last among NFL starters with 149.5 yards, passing yards per game on average. And they were 23rd in points scored per game at 19.2. So I guess it's great Darnell Wright's on the right side of the offensive line, and it looks like he's going to be a keeper. Mm-hmm. Time will tell.
Well, you'd hope,
it's,
right?
It's great they got DJ Moore, and you know, obviously you need people for Justin to be able to throw to. The idea that Ryan Poles believes that Justin has everything he needs now, I hope that he doesn't really believe that. I mean, I would ask you, Jeff, how much improvement do you need to see, and how do you even quantify it? If he's now middle of the pack in passing yards per game, that's a significant leap. Is that enough? I mean, how many points per game do you have to see an increase to make it, you know, eye-popping or eye-catching in a division that appears now to be open because of Aaron Rodgers' final departure out of Green Bay?
It's a great question. I can't put a specific number on what Justin Fields will have to register for me to be sold. I think the Bears have showed us, though, in their actions this year, they're leaving open the possibility there's an escape hatch there for getting off of the Justin Fields being your quarterback in 2024. Bears fans may not want to hear that. I don't think the Bears are leaning in any particular way. I think it's almost a 50-50 situation right here. Justin Fields needs to show more improvement this year. I don't know if he's got everything around him to be a Super Bowl contender, right? But it's certainly better. I think everything they've added to the roster offensively looks a lot better on paper than it did just 1 year ago. And so if we take Luke Getsy at his word, where he's talking about Justin Fields being light years ahead than where he was last year, then yes, there's all the opportunity now for him to really show people he's capable of being a franchise quarterback. But I don't think the Bears are completely sold. Like, if he doesn't show that he can read from the pocket and dissect what he's seeing and actually take advantage of what DJ Moore is going to give him as a security blanket, you know, take advantage of Tyler Scott as somebody who they're bringing in to be an explosive player. Darnell Mooney needs to get back healthy, but like, he needs to show that with Mooney and Claypool, he can get the most out of them as well. And oh yeah, Komet and Robert Tonyan, you've got guys now who are professionals, right? Like, I think they're capable NFL players. Like, I still need more from the talent positions around him. But if Justin Fields is going to be an elite quarterback in this league, I think there's enough here to know it next year when the season wraps up. Now, yeah, whether that's 3,200 passing yards, I would hope that's kind of like the minimum of where we're at next season, right? But I don't know if he needs to crack 4,000 necessarily.
Well, to your point, you're talking about not only picking up the final option year on his contract, rookie contract, but mm-hmm. you're going to have another high pick next year. And if you've come to the conclusion that he's not a franchise quarterback, you have to move on.
Yeah.
You have to utilize that high pick to be in a position to go out and get the next quarterback of the future. And here's hoping he is the guy. I still believe he is, but yeah, I'm with you. You have to see significant improvement, even if it doesn't necessarily translate into hard numbers. Yeah, it has to be the eye test from game one through game 17. You have to see him not only getting better individually, but lifting the play around him and making the right decisions and doing the right things and being a more consistent operator of that offense to the point where breaking 21 points isn't a task that you don't think can be done on a weekly basis.
Yeah, because the escape hatch is the two first-round picks next year. If Justin Fields and the Bears don't have, if they have a mid-round pick because they're a little bit better, but they don't end up, you know, in the top 10 or whatever, or, and then you couple that with the fact that they've also have the Panthers' first-round pick, that is your opportunity to move up in the draft and try and get into whether it be the Caleb Williams or Drake May sweepstakes if you're not sold on Fields. That's your escape hatch next season. You've got multiple first-round picks. You can also use a first-round pick from the following season after that. You can package a lot of stuff to move up in next year's draft if you find out after the end of the season Justin Fields is not the guy. But no matter what, this is the season where the Bears need to come to a final determination on Justin Fields, whether Bears fans like to hear that or not. 312-332-3776. When we wrap things up here next, Brian's got an interesting story about yesterday's Kentucky Derby winning jockey, and I'll tell you why tomorrow night could be a very momentous occasion in one Chicago sports franchise's history. I'll tell you about that. Brian tells you about the jockey next.
And they're into the stretch, and two fills. That's turned for home on top. Kings Barnes, here's Mage, coming scrambling down the outside. Angel and Empire is putting an end run, and there's one for Lunderland. Two fills on the inside, trying to hold on Mage. Mage is taking the lead here as they come into the final 16, and it is going to be Mage to win the Kentucky Derby.
ESPN 1000, Mage wins the 149th Kentucky Derby. And the jockey has a personal connection, or I guess, Brian, you have a personal connection with the jockey of the winner of yesterday's 149th Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, and speaking of jockeys, first, a tip of the hat to Jareth Lubberry, who was on two fills, who made a courageous move on the rail. I don't even know how he got through there. Two fills, a Hawthorne horse, Illinois connections. Would have been a great win and a great story, but I mean, just for a young jockey who's overcome a lot of injury and a lot of heartache and was actually commuting once they shut down Arlington, was commuting down to tracks in Kentucky while his family's lived up here because they love living up here and just bought a house. I mean, talk about perseverance at a young age. But Javier Castellano, yeah, you know, just like the Phoenix Suns new owner talk, mm-hmm. you don't get into horse racing to make money. You get in to lose money, but you get into it for the experience. And, you know, I've been blessed to get to know Eddie O over the years, covering him with the Hawks and the Rangers. And we always talked about getting a horse together, and we actually did it one time. Mm-hmm. And the first horse I had, Hoosier Drama. And because Eddie O is Eddie O, Edzo got Todd Pletcher to train our horse. And I love that horse. He's my avatar on my Twitter feed. But Javier was the jockey that broke the Hoosier Drama's maiden. But even before that, Kentucky Oaks Day, we believe we had a horse with some promise because he showed it at Gulfstream. So we put it, ship him to Louisville. And I'm down there on Kentucky Oaks Day on May 6th, 2016. By the way, happy belated anniversary because you got married on Derby Day.
Thank you.
And Javier is on Hoosier Drama, And Edsel's down there doing broadcasts for NBC, and I get there early, and I'm sitting there from 9 a.m. with the last race on the card, at the race immediately after the Kentucky Oaks. And Javier Casiano wins the Kentucky Oaks, the first time he won the Oaks, just like yesterday at 45 was the first time he won the Derby. And as Randy Moss said, you're not going to find a nicer guy in horse racing than Javier Casiano, mm-hmm. and I swear to that. But Javier's on Hoosier Drama. Edzo and I are waiting toward the finish line, you know, waiting for the end of the race. Hoosier Drama, like Mage, is a closer, is going to make his move in the stretch, and made a move, but not nearly like he did. And we were not sure what happened. Javier comes back to us after the race and said, "Sorry, boss, I lost the stick." And I'm like, I didn't even understand what he was saying. He's snapping the rubber band on his wrist. He went to twirl the whip in the air before he hit Hoosier Drama, and the whip went up, and it went down into the grass. He never touched him, and then he was giving him a hand ride, if I may say, and he ended up like fifth or sixth. But I'm like, you're Javier bleeping Castellano, a Hall of Fame jockey. How did you lose the stick? But that's horse racing.
Yeah.
And you never know what's going to happen or how it's going to happen, and sometimes it happens to be great, and sometimes it's heartbreaking. And speaking, I mean, horse racing is all about the connections and the stories and everything else. If you want to be moved, if you didn't watch the 8 hours of coverage yesterday, Google the story about Cody's wish and make sure you have a box of Kleenex next to you.
I will echo that. As we rush off here, less than a minute to go, thanks to Kendra Smith for producing us today. As always, great job by her. Do want to mention, could be a huge day for the Blackhawks tomorrow. It is the NHL draft lottery tomorrow at 7 o'clock on ESPN. They have a 22% chance to land in the top two. And, of course, everybody has been watching Connor Bedard play all season. He's the huge prize. They have an 11.5% chance to land the number one pick, an 11.2% chance to fall in the top two spot. Adam Fantilli, also a very good player. So cross your fingers, Hawks fans. Let's hope they can win the lottery and get themselves a Connor Bedard. Brian, talk to you next week, my man. We will do it again very soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.